Welcome to Stars Matter, a recruiting podcast from The Athletic. I'm Mitch Light, joined by Ari Wasserman. Ari, how are you doing today, bud?
I'm doing good, man. How are you? I'm so fired up to talk about recruiting. A lot going on this week.
Wow, you are excited, and there is a lot going on. We've got a good show. We've got Ari's into hyperbole, but I don't think this is hyperbole. We got maybe one of the most significant commitments for Michigan in years. And no, it's not a certain five-star quarterback from North Carolina. Is Ari going to call a shot on Dylan Raiola's destination? We'll ask him about that. Deion gets his class of 2024 quarterback, and we have some interesting geographical data from a series that Manny Navarro's been working on. Mailbag, trivia. But Ari, let's dive in. Michigan, why don't you tell everyone what happened and why you think it's so significant? You wrote a column on it that was published first thing Wednesday morning on The Athletic.
And edited Tuesday night.
Yes, Tuesday night, after I came home from dinner. Maybe had a cocktail or two, but your writing is just
pristine that it didn't matter if you were lucid. Yeah,
exactly. Yes.
Four-star running back Jordan Marshall of Cincinnati, Archbishop Mueller, committed to Michigan on Tuesday.
Do people call it Archbishop Mueller? I thought it was just Cincinnati.
It's just Mueller.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I don't know.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
The school is called Archbishop Mueller, so for the sake of being correct,
yes,
and trying to avoid the "well, actually" comments, he just put the whole thing in there. But what's significant about that is that he is a top 100 player nationally. He has an Ohio State offer. Ohio State wanted him. Michigan came into Ohio and took him. And I went and looked this up.
Not literally.
They stole him. They put him in a van and they brought him back up to him.
What if you can do that in recruiting?
like from old school?
Yes.
they got him. Yeah. And of course, you have a lot of people who say it's a long time till signing day, and I believe that. You never know what can happen with these kids. Change their minds, whatever. They got a commitment from a top 100 player in the state of Ohio. So I went to look it up yesterday because I couldn't recall a single instance of this happening during my time on the beat. And it turned out the last time they earned a commitment from a top 100 player in the state of Ohio with an Ohio State offer came 79 days before Urban Meyer was hired. All the way back in
2011. Class of 2013 prospect, but 2011.
Yes.
It happened.
But think about how long that is. That's over a decade.
And I mean, we could have looked this up. I mean, off the top of your head, how many top 100 players in Ohio? They're averaging about 3 or 4 a year, you think?
Some years 3, some years 7, some years 2. I mean, it's
maybe there's 50. Maybe there's been anywhere from 30 to 60.
In the one program that's done a good job of getting Ohio players, has been Notre Dame, because there's a lot of private Catholic schools in the state of Ohio that, kind of serve as small Notre Dame embassies for players who crave that atmosphere. And Clemson has done it a few times, but this is the first time since Urban Meyer took over that it's happened. And that's significant to me. Now, there's a lot of people who will read the column that I wrote and say, it's one player, he's a running back, why do you think this is a big deal? This is overblown. And it's not so much that I believe that this single player is going to be the reason why Michigan continues to dominate the rivalry. It's a symptom of what could come and become a major ailment for Ohio State. This never happened. I mean, it literally never happened in the last 10 years. And now it happened in a big way after Michigan has won the rivalry game 2 years in a row. So to me, Michigan getting back into Ohio after writing the state off for a large portion of the previous decade is a nice step in the right direction, but succeeding in winning a battle is another one.
It's just another threat to Ohio State too. It's the fact that it's Michigan is the most significant because it's the rival, but like, as you just mentioned, Notre Dame coming in, and if Michigan's a threat too, the more threats to Ohio State's dominance in its own state, so maybe over a 3-year period, they're getting one or two less of those kids that they normally think they should get. It's just something they didn't have to worry about in years past. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like everything in recruiting is more complex than just the data. And Ohio State has had the comfortable reality that any top 100 player that comes into the state of Ohio or through the state of Ohio will end up a Buckeye. That's been a second thought. There are Jackson Carmans and Tommy Kramers. There are a few of them that didn't. But for the most part, it's been a second thought. And because they have this luxury, we talk about Ohio State's recruiting advantage as being the only Power 5 program in the state of Ohio. I get it. Cincinnati, it's changing. But for now, and for all of history, that's been the case. Kids in Ohio grow up wanting to go and dreaming of going to Ohio State. It's a layup. And when they get those players, it's not long drawn out recruitments that cause a lot of time to be spent. Not that they don't, you know, call and keep in touch with commitments or, you know, host them and continue to recruit them, but it's a lot different than a long drawn out national recruitment that takes a lot of your time and energy. So if you picture a world where Michigan is a 30% chance or 40% chance of getting a top 100 player of Ohio moving forward, that increases the energy that Ohio State has to expend putting together its classes. It also gives Michigan a clear and obvious second geographical pinpoint after Michigan for them to build their classes around. And it also is just a personal geographical situation because historically Michigan has gotten its best players from the state of Ohio. And they stopped doing it for the past 10 years.
It's very close to population bases in Ohio.
And Toledo is a major part, you know, and it's right on the border there. It's in technically in Ohio, but it's a battleground. Cincinnati has always been kind of a weird place for Ohio State to recruit. There hasn't really been the Ohio connection that you might get in Cleveland, Akron, you know, in other cities. But it's still in Ohio. And they did a very good job, Ohio State did, mending fences and making Cincinnati a major part of their recruiting strategy when Kerry Combs was a longtime assistant there. And, you know, it seemed like things were on the right track. And then Michigan comes in and takes a position of need that Ohio State wanted away from Ohio State. And people might say, well, Ohio State's probably just going to end up with James Peoples, who's that top 100 running back out of San Antonio. And maybe they will. You know, Ohio State does a very good job recruiting. But just the presence of Michigan as a threat on their home turf will have long-lasting effects on the psychology of this rivalry, the amount of effort that Ohio State has to put in to put the base of their classes together. And then, of course, would be the thing that we haven't said that's most obvious is make Michigan better on the field too. So I thought that was a very significant commitment, not because this player himself is going to transform the rivalry or continue to get Michigan over the top, but more so because it could be the first of a trend that becomes very concerning to Ohio State as they are losing ground in the recruiting battles and the rivalry as a whole.
Yeah, and there's more Michigan recruiting news. On Sunday, Brandon Hillman, a four-star athlete from Virginia who had recently asked out of his letter of intent, class of 2023 prospect, asked out of his letter of intent with Notre Dame, opened it back up, had offers from a lot of teams, including Ohio State. He signed with Michigan, so that bolstered.
That was a head-to-head battle.
Yeah, that bolstered their 2023 class. Maybe I should know this. Could ask Pete Sampson, but I didn't read. Do we know why Hillman? He says personal reasons. Do we know why he?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there might be some number issues happening at Notre Dame right now. But regardless of why, I think that it's clearly a person that people wanted. I mean, you don't just get LSU, Michigan, and Ohio State offers if you're not good. So, right. You know, I think people are trying to be like, well, that's. You know, what people do when someone leaves your favorite program. It was an important get. It was somebody that Ohio State wanted at a critical position, and Michigan got him. That's not an Ohio kid, but if they start winning head-to-head battles with Ohio State in Ohio, they're going to certainly be able to do it on the national scale. And perception is key. I think this is your whole theory, Mitch, of like how important winning is. Because, you know, all it took is a few wins here. Now Michigan all of a sudden has some ground to stand on that maybe it didn't a few years ago.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you saw this. Hopefully you did because you're a recruiting writer and, you know, it happened a couple hours ago. But 2024 offensive tackle Ben Roebuck from Lakewood, St. Edward, a three-star, high three-star, number 455. That's very close to a four-star this year and things will shake out. From, like I said, Lakewood, St. Edward. His 247 profile did not show an Ohio State offer.
He does not have one. Yeah,
does not have an Ohio State offer. Committed to Michigan. Same high school as the Armstrong twins, both four stars, I believe, who both have Ohio State offers, who have not commit, who are uncommitted. So first of all, pretty damn good offensive line there. This is not to the, especially since he didn't have an Ohio State offer, he might have earned one at some point, but still another good get for Michigan.
Yeah, you know, and like they have four players out of Ohio this year. And, you know, we'll get to Manny Navarro's piece. I'm sure you looked this up, but I bet you that's probably they're on pace to break whatever total amount of players they took out of Ohio in the last 5-10 years. And of course, the Armstrong twins that go to Lakewood, St. Edward too, are both Ohio State offers and people that they want the most. And it's like also too, you can dismiss the idea, and I have for a long time, of like, okay, well, they can take the Ohio players that Ohio State wants. I think that they should have been doing that more often in the past 10 years than they've been doing. But also too, like, St. Ed's is a major powerhouse in Ohio for high school football. So even if this kid doesn't have an Ohio State offer, Michigan is re-lubing the wheels here, you know, and later on down the line, when they have players like the Armstrong twins or in later classes, when Michigan comes in, they're going to be received differently. You know, I think it's all effort. It's not overnight. It takes time to reassert your presence in a place. And if they're going to be in Cleveland, in Cincinnati, I don't know what they'll do in Columbus, but they gave Zach Harrison a run for their money in the 19 class. Like, this is just going to be a situation where Ohio State sees Michigan in every direction they turn. And if you remember when Ohio State had a Clemson problem, you know, back in 2016 through 19, everywhere they looked, Clemson was standing there. You know, Clemson came into Ohio and took Jackson Carmen away from them. Clemson beat them 31-0 in 2016 in the playoff. Clemson beat them again in a heartbreaker in the Fiesta Bowl in 19. Like, it wasn't until 2020 that Ohio State finally got the Clemson, you know, burden off their shoulders. And I wonder if Michigan is going to start showing up in other places aside from that one Saturday every year in November. Like, if Michigan becomes a major issue for them all the time, A, that's the spirit of what makes the rivalry great, and B, that could be the worst nightmare for Ohio State. And, like, for a long time, it never even seemed like that was possible because they weren't trying. Michigan stopped trying. And that was kind of the major gripe that I've had with Harbaugh and his staff for the past, you know, 5 years before they kind of got it together. And the fact that they're back in to Ohio now, I think is significant. So, you know, you might think that the column was overblown. You might think that it's not, it's just one guy, who cares? But I think doing it with one guy proves that it's possible. And for a while there, it seemed impossible.
Yeah, no doubt. Thought it was good. Didn't think it was hyperbolic by any stretch. Now, you did have a story earlier in the week, your recruiting mailbag. One of the questions was about Nebraska's recruiting. You sort of called your shot on Dylan Raiola.
I did.
The number one quarterback in the country from Phoenix. Maybe it's your local connections in your hometown of Phoenix. I read that and I walked away saying, Ari thinks he's going to Nebraska. Is that fair to say?
I think Nebraska has a very good shot, and it would not shock me if he committed soon. But if he ends up going to Georgia, am I going to be like, oh my God, who could have seen that coming? You know, I mean, he's considering Nebraska, Georgia, USC, and other places. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that he's going to or will visit Georgia multiple times, and he is going to visit Nebraska 3 times. And that's just in the spring. So a lot of recruiting sometimes, I think, is just kind of tracking the steps of what a guy's doing, how they're spending their money, the time that they travel, the effort they make. And he's making a lot of effort to be around Nebraska. And if you watch Nebraska's recruiting, and we discussed this last week, but they passed on a top 500 player at the quarterback position just this past week. Because it seems like they are all in on this guy. So if you want me to sit here and make a bold prediction of like, yeah, he is going to Nebraska, I don't know that I'd feel comfortable doing that. But I think that Nebraska in the last few weeks seems to be more of a realistic option or potential than I felt after he left the USC situation or visit. Now, if you look, and Mitch Sherman said this to me,
our Nebraska writer.
That if you notice every time Dylan takes a visit somewhere that's exciting, you know, there's a lot of hype around the place he just visited, you know, and rightfully so. Like, I don't know if there is a 16-year-old kid who would go to USC at the quarterback position and not leave starstruck by what he saw. you know, the palm trees, the Heisman trophies, the coach, you know, the infinity pool, like all of it. Like I can imagine like being an impressionable teenager going to see that and being promised the world. Like I would come home feeling pretty good about it too. But who's going to win? Who's going to have the staying power? Who's going to, you know, be the place he actually signs? I have a feeling that Nebraska is in a much better position than we're giving him credit for. And it's important to acknowledge that. Now, again, Georgia wins the battle, then what? Shocker, right? But, you know, I hope he goes to Nebraska. Can I say that?
Yeah.
Is that homerish?
Well, you're not.
I hope he does.
Yeah, I do too. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, you know, we're all
for spreading the wealth.
We're all for coaches doing good. Like, Matt Rhule saved Baylor, right? Like, can you actually think, like, if Nebraska has a competent coaching staff that knows how to evaluate talent and signs top 25 players? Somebody said this in the comments on one of my stories. They could be what Wisconsin was, right?
Sure.
They could be a consistent 10-11 win team that has some transcendent years, especially if they get a guy who's being compared to Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback position.
Well, think of it this way. They will recruit better than Wisconsin has recruited. And they have a staff in Matt Rhule and his staff that we know can coach.
Well, the problem now, though, is that Wisconsin's era of dominance came during they've benefited greatly from being in the Big Ten West.
Of course.
And the divisions are going to be going away. So it's going to be harder for a Big Ten West team, once they start muddying it up with the interconference play the interdivision play, could be consistently an 11-win team. But I think that they could model their program as a consistent hard – like, I think that they could be Penn State. Right? Like, is that
– Yeah. I mean, Penn State has – I
think
they could be
Michigan State. I think they could have years where they're really, really good.
Penn State has been consistently stronger than Michigan State. Michigan State's had some spikes.
So maybe Michigan State is a better thought process.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. And we've talked about this, and anyone can look up the numbers. You know, for a while there, and I was guilty of this too, that like I blamed a lot of Nebraska's problems on recruiting. Oh, you know, in this day and age, you can't get kids to visit. You can't get kids out there. They were shining top 25 classes under the previous staff. Yeah. So that was an issue. So we assume with this staff that the recruiting will not go down. It'll probably stay the same or get better. And this staff has proven itself at two schools, Matt Rhule at two schools, at Temple and Baylor, that he knows what he's doing in the college rank. So yeah, you know, with every league, like the SEC is just so top heavy. There's so many, you know, you obviously have Alabama and Georgia, but depending on the coach and in the year, you know, Auburn can be freaking awesome. Florida can be, there's so many, like the Big Ten hierarchy is a little more interesting, or, you know, just you got Ohio State, then is it Michigan, Penn State next? And then what's that next tier? But I think like you mentioned, getting rid of the divisions is really going to cloud things up.
You know, and the Big Ten East has been, by and large, not the last few years, dominated by Ohio State, but Michigan State's won the Big Ten East. Penn State has won the Big Ten East. And Michigan's won the Big Ten East now twice. So it's not like it's impossible. It's just a matter of whether or not Nebraska could assemble a roster that could like compete with that. And I think they probably could. You know,
it would
and
help to have Dylan Raiola.
And there are different types of top 25 classes, too. Like, they've already proven they can sign top 25 classes. But what about functional ones? What about ones that actually, you know, wind up keeping players but also fit the scheme, and you have a coach that knows how he wants to handle things and handles it that way, like not discombobulated? Like, hope is not lost there.
Not at all.
Which is funny.
It's been after hiring Scott Frost, who we all thought would work out, and we're all like, well, this guy can't get it done. There's no hope there. But that's not the case. There's another guy who's going to, we think, has a chance to get it done. Okay. What a transition. We are almost 20 minutes into the podcast. Deion Sanders has his first high school quarterback recruit, and we haven't brought it up yet. That ends now. We're going to bring it up. Danny O'Neill, three-star prospect from Indianapolis Cathedral, a program that's produced a lot of good players over the years. Number 561 overall. Number 33 quarterback in the 247 composite, 6 feet, 185. So a little undersized for a quarterback. I believe you're going to try and talk to Danny at some point this week for a story, but you know,
literally 20 minutes after this podcast is
okay. So Deion goes to Indianapolis for his quarterback. Thoughts?
Kind of random.
Yeah. See, I don't know where we expect because like in Colorado's not going to get a lot of players from the state. We know that. So like, I guess I just would have assumed like Southern California, that he was going to go into California or Dallas or Florida, but like, it's just Indianapolis seems just very random.
Well, the thing too, and I'm going to try to talk to him about this, is that Danny O'Neill is rated 571 in the composite, right? His offer list includes Cincinnati, UConn, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisville, Northwestern, Purdue, Wake Forest, West Virginia, and a few more. But he doesn't have a screaming offers list. Now, I'm not disparaging him or Colorado, but if you look at him, like the opportunity to play at Colorado and be at an it place before it's an it place is a very attractive opportunity for him. Like, wouldn't you think that? Like, instead of going to a place like West Virginia or a middle tier, like, wouldn't you want to go to the new cool place?
Sure.
And really try it out? Like, there is a chance that this guy, Danny O'Neill, is the starting quarterback for a team that is favored to win the Pac-12 in 3 years. Like, is that possible?
My guess is they would have a transfer. If they're that good in 3 years, they'll have a former five-star, some dude transfer in. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you make a decision, you can't make a decision of, well, somebody might transfer in, because that's true anywhere.
Right.
I don't think Tate Martell saw Justin Fields coming either, but when he was in a commitment.
We haven't had a Tate Martell reference in probably about 6 months. We need to at least once a month.
I mean, it's my dream to just talk to him on the phone and write a story about like what he's doing and how it went.
What is your dream? I think your dream is probably like a 12-hour car ride with Bill Landis and Tate Martell.
If I could pick like one person to write about from a recruiting standpoint, it would be Tate. Yeah. Like if you could like make a genie appear and be like, Ari, you can get access to one person and he'll talk to you frankly about the things you want to know. I think that story would go bonkers.
Yeah.
People would read the hell out of that.
Miami Hurricanes legend, Tate Martell. Yeah. UNLV running rebel legend.
Yeah, he was in that Netflix show.
Yeah.
He went to Gorman. He went to Ohio State. Then he goes down and he's posting pictures with models on boats.
Well, then he committed to like Washington and Texas A&M.
I think he committed to Washington, I think, in eighth grade.
There you go.
Huskies. And then I don't know if he did A&M. I can't remember. It's been 7 years, but yeah, his story.
No, he was A&M. Incredible. That's when I remember. That's when I first heard of him. He decommitted from A&M to go to, I think it might have been Washington before that, but when I first heard of him, I think he committed to A&M.
I think Washington was a middle school commitment. Then he committed to A&M, and then he flipped from A&M to Ohio State.
So did he commit to Washington before Chris Peterson was the head coach?
You'd have to look that up. Probably,
yeah.
I don't remember. But what were you saying? So anyway, I don't know that Colorado, for as sexy as it is in a position where it's going to go really become a factor with guys like Dylan Raiola or Jaden Davis or Elijah Brown or Julian Sain.
Just not good enough yet. And there's no proof of,
I don't know. Like it's just he's a cornerback and he's specialized. And I mean, do you think that Colorado is the perfect place to go if you're a five-star player who wants to play in the NFL at the quarterback position?
I think we don't need to get in this debate anymore, but I think if you're a five-star quarterback who's going to play in the NFL, you will play in the NFL regardless of where you go. Unless you go play like in the you don't want to go run like go to Army and run the option.
I really wish there was a way to prove that wasn't like involving time travel or a time bend. I'd like to
Sean Lewis is a very good offensive coordinator, their offensive coordinator ran a fun quarterback, maybe it's not the most pro friendly. I don't know. It's, but they throw the ball all over the place. They scored a ton of points at Kent State.
Yeah. If I have an Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, and USC offer and Colorado comes in, no shot they're even getting 5 minutes.
To me, it's more about, yeah. You'll probably disagree with this. To me, it's more about I'm a five-star quarterback. I don't need to take a risk, even though Deion's cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I don't need to take a risk on not winning at a high enough level. Like, I want to compete for the playoff right away. It's not about my
NFL future. The whole thing is a risk. Anybody who goes there is taking a risk.
Right, but it's not about my NFL future. Like, if I'm that good, I'm going to play in the NFL.
It's the whole package.
Right, but again, for me personally, the biggest risk would be I want to win right away, and I'm not convinced they're going to win at the highest level right away.
So were you the type of person that would rather go to a place that's already built up than go there and build it yourself?
Well, I'm not a five-star quarterback, decision based on that.
You always make it seem like you would go to the smaller school.
I just would.
Like when we had the Nebraska argument, it made it seem like if you or Gabe, your son, were a five-star prospect, that you would encourage him to go somewhere that wasn't already built up. And what you just said contradicts that. So I'm just trying to figure out like what.
That's not what I meant. I just don't think that you need to go to Alabama or Georgia to be the top five draft pick. We've had this conversation many times.
And I also don't think that people in that position need to risk it for no reason.
Maybe they don't think it's a risk. Maybe Dylan Raiola just wants to go to Nebraska and he doesn't look at it as a risk.
Yeah, but even Colorado is probably an even bigger risk than Nebraska.
Colorado is a much bigger risk than Nebraska right now.
And they have a former head coach as an offensive coordinator, and you could still say that.
Yeah.
So for this guy, Danny O'Neill, this is a sweet spot. Like he hasn't reached the point yet where he is being recruited by the big dogs of the sport, but he gets a Colorado offer from the team that we talk about the most on this podcast the last 2 months as a result of Deion's hire. Like he could parlay this into being at the right place at the right time and being the quarterback of a really good football team. And like to me, like I might take that risk if I were him. I don't know if I would if I were Arch Manning, but if I were him, I would.
Yeah. Well, if you ask the right questions, you'll find out in the next few hours.
Let me ask you this, because I actually thought about this after the Nebraska conversation, and it annoyed me that I didn't bring it up, and I just remembered.
Okay.
What about three-star prospects? So like you always say that like a five-star prospect can go anywhere, and if they're good enough from a natural talent standpoint, they'll end up in the NFL. But what about a three-star? Do you think that the three-star would have as same amount of opportunity or potential to be developed into a first-round draft pick at a place like Nebraska as they would at USC or Alabama?
That's a good question, and I'm going to contradict myself here. I think a three-star prospect going to Ohio State and throwing to those receivers is going to look better and get more attention.
Now, focus solely on the quarterback development aspect of it.
Okay, Jay Cutler came to Vanderbilt with an offer from Illinois that was pulled because of a coaching change, and then Purdue wanted him to be a safety. He redshirted, then basically ran the option for 2 years and got the shit beat out of him running the option. But you could tell if you saw him, he had an unbelievable arm and he was a great athlete. He did not play on a winning team and he was drafted in the top 10 overall because he was a great quarterback.
Yeah, there is no correlation between winning and being a top 10 pick. It's about whether or not you possess the tools and the development in order to.
Right. So I'm saying like Jay Cutler did not play with a wide receiver. I don't think he played with an offensive skill player who played in the NFL. And yet, I guess what I'm trying to ask you,
and you keep avoiding it, and I'm getting angry. Not really angry, but I want to hit you. Does quarterback coaching matter at all to you?
Yes, or is it just of course it does. But there's great. If we think Sean Lewis is a great quarterback coach, as an example, as the offensive coordinator at Colorado, well, you're still getting coached by him if you went to Kent State. There's great coaches all over the place. Watch NCAA tournament. There's great coaches at every level. There's great quarterback coaches at AAC schools.
Yes or no? If you're a three-star prospect, do you think you have a better or the same chance of being developed into a top 10 pick at the quarterback position at Alabama as you do at Colorado? That's a complete dismissal of quarterback coaching.
But you're just assuming that you're being better coached at Alabama at the quarterback position than you are.
They pay them more money. They take promotions.
Just you make more money?
Yes.
You're a better employee?
Because they get plucked from the
previous
jobs.
Does everyone who makes more money,
you
at the Athletic, a better employee?
Probably.
So you're all is just.
I mean,
how
actually,
much you get
yeah,
paid.
Probably.
So there can't
no,
be
no, but it's
there can't
it's not
be
about
a quarterback
salary
coach.
Structure. It's about being climbing up the corporate ladder and continually getting better jobs because you're better at your job. That's why people
Nick
started.
Nick Saban was a defensive backs coach when he first came up, was a defensive coordinator. So he was coaching. He was a great coach, but he wasn't a head coach yet. He wasn't the highest paid. That's asinine. That just because someone makes more money at Alabama, they're a better coach.
The only reason why Sean Lewis is the offensive coordinator at Colorado is so that he could go get a head coaching job somewhere else.
Where? Kent State?
What do you think? He left Kent State to be a coordinator so that he can move up the ladder and get paid more. That's the whole point.
Right.
What are you talking about?
But if he went to Kent State, if a quarterback went to Kent State, he's still getting the same coaching that he is at Colorado.
So do you think that going to Kent State or going to Bama, you're –
It depends on who your coach
development is the same.
It depends on who coaches you. It depends on who coaches you. Obviously, there's some bad coaches.
Dustin Crum, the quarterback at Kent State last year, got the same coaching as Ty Simpson will get.
If you think that Sean Lewis is as good of a coach as Bill O'Brien, I'm not saying that's the case or not the case, but there's bad coaches in the MAC. There's great coaches in the MAC. There's bad coaches in the SEC. There's bad quarterback coaches in the SEC.
Do you think that the quarterback coaches at the places that continually create first-round draft picks and Heisman Trophy winners
are bad? They don't create them. They recruit them.
You make me – you are, like, making me crazy, like, right now. Like, that it's
common
insane
sense makes you crazy?
No, what you're saying is asinine.
It is not.
Okay.
All right. I have a new game for us to play. It would be great to play it online, like, in your stories, but it's kind of mean. Where – you need to set the betting odds or the odds on where each five-star signee will eventually transfer to. Here's the origin of this. Antonio Morales, our USC writer, we were over Slack or something. Some Corey Foreman's name came up, and I said, "Oh, future San Diego State Aztec Corey Foreman," because Antonio went to San Diego State, and he's like, "No, future Oregon Duck." Now Corey Foreman, former number one recruit in the country at one point, was a five star, hasn't really panned out, hasn't started yet. Now he's entering his third year, so I was like, it would be fun when all these guys signed to guess where they're going to end their careers.
So,
just assuming that everyone's going to transfer because everyone transfers.
Everyone's just going to fail.
Yeah.
okay. Yeah. Who are we playing with?
Yeah. Pick this year's. Pick a couple guys. Five
Arch
stars.
Arch Manning, Furcher, Tulane, Wave. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That is really mean.
Yeah. So.
I didn't know you had a mean bone in your body.
This is more like being a wise ass bone.
Yeah, that's what Antonio always does. Every time I say, "Ah, oh, this is a commitment," yeah, well, he always just like makes up whatever they're going to transfer to because he thinks everybody stinks.
Yeah. All right. Let's go over some 2024 commits. There have been some quarterbacks, not just the ones we've talked about. UCF got a quarterback, Riley Trujillo from Jacksonville, number 672, number 40 overall. Georgia got athlete DeMello Jones from Swainsboro, Georgia, in-state. We've talked a lot about Georgia's recruiting, in-state, not in-state, number 194 overall. Georgia Tech linebacker Jordan Boyd from Aiken, South Carolina, number 634, and in interior offensive lineman Santana Alotupiola from IMG Academy, number 952. Missouri got a defensive lineman Tyone Gray from in-state Florissant, Missouri, number 338, four-star. Missouri has four commits, three in-state, something to monitor. And we talked about Colorado getting Danny O'Neill. So I referenced this at the beginning. Manny Navarro, Florida man for us at The Athletic. He was covers Miami and recruiting, has done an amazing job researching where each Power 5 school is going to get its has gotten its signees over the last 6 years, six cycles, from 2018 through 2023, and is going conference by conference. I made charts for them all, and then Manny kind of dives into the numbers. The first one was up. This podcast will drop on Thursday. So the first one was up Tuesday, the ACC, and then the Big 12 was published Thursday morning. Right, we're going to talk about the ACC right now. I'm going to – have you've looked at it, right?
I've read it, yeah.
Okay. But I'm guessing you don't remember. I'm going to
go. I don't remember all the numbers.
Right, yeah. So I'm going to go school by school, and I want you to guess what percent of their signees have been from in-state over the last 6 years. We'll go quick. You know,
okay.
We won't spend. And then I'm going to leave. And then I'm going to give the state that has the most signees, most out-of-state signees.
In the Boston last 5 years, you said, right?
6 years, 18 through 23.
Okay.
Boston College.
10%.
16%. New Jersey, okay. their biggest out-of-state market is New Jersey with 18. Clemson.
20%.
16%. Which state do you think is their biggest supplier of talent? Think of a map.
Atlanta. Georgia.
Georgia, 35. Duke.
Oh, man. Duke. I'm trying to remember what states these teams are in.
You don't know what state Duke is in?
Yeah, North Carolina. Yeah. I would say 30%.
25%, and then Georgia at 20. Tell you why we think Georgia is such a great job. Most of these schools go to Georgia for recruits. Florida State.
Georgia's their biggest thing too?
Yes, biggest out of state. Okay.
Florida State.
Florida State is second among ACC schools for highest percentage of in-state players. I probably would have said number one.
Is it behind Miami?
It's third. Excuse me. Miami is first.
Yeah.
We'll get to Miami.
So I will say that they are probably 60%. Florida.
Florida State's 52%.
Okay, so I'm on the money here.
Yeah, and then Georgia, they've 22 from Georgia. Okay, Georgia Tech.
65%.
57%. They're number two behind Miami. Florida State's number three. And then Florida, 21 players. Louisville, I believe.
0%.
Louisville is in the bottom 3 or 4% of in-state recruits.
Is it like 5% for real?
It's 7%.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
I have this down as a potential story for one of our recruiting writers, which I wasn't going to throw your way because you got a lot on your plate, but maybe like a story with Jeff Brom about. Here's what Louisville's done in the past. They've been getting their ass kicked in state. Where's your focus?
Well, you're from here. Kentucky's done such a great job there.
Right, right. So I think that's kind of like state. We used to have the state of the program stories that I know you really love to do. Like
no, but that's good.
State of recruitment. And Manny's working on one in South Florida, like with new coaching staff there, because they've passed the previous staff, Jeff Scott.
That's like 7% in a state like that.
It's a state really school.
Low. Yeah. Like I can understand like if BC was.
Right.
Or a place that was in a state that didn't have a ton of players, but 7% in Kentucky is just way absurd. Too low. And what's their biggest? Georgia too?
Yeah, 33.
You know,
that's not 33%. It's this 33 is the raw number. 33 players over the last 6 years.
But the amount of sure depth in that state is coming. I mean, Georgia is like the breeding ground for the SEC and the ACC.
Right. It's absurd. Okay, Miami, what's your guess?
70%.
65%. You've been pretty good. Then next is for Miami, the next state is Georgia, obviously at 14. North Carolina.
60%.
Okay. Well, I could make fun of you for not remembering because we said what schools were third that had 52. Like,
no, I'm just Florida trying State was my
third
best.
That had 52%. Miami, North Carolina's at 44%. Georgia with 24 players is next. NC State.
I wonder what it is during the Mac Brown era, though. I bet you it's higher than that.
Yeah. I could look that up.
NC State's probably higher than North Carolina. I'd say if they're 44, I'd say 50.
Exactly.
Bang.
With 19 players from Georgia. Okay, Notre Dame. We grouped Notre Dame with the ACC.
Ooh, Notre Dame is probably, 10%.
Six. So lower than Louisville, but that's not a surprise. Hey, what state do you think Notre Dame has the most players from in the last 6 years?
California.
Bingo. 15. But very spread out.
Half of them are quarterbacks.
Yeah. Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh.
Pennsylvania. That's got to be a pretty high number. I'd say 40%.
First one you're way off on.
Really?
19%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Florida's number one for them, 23.
That's interesting, too.
Yeah. I've also thought about Pitt as sort of a state of the recruiting story. State of like
that's, how they I mean, that's the second most interesting number we've come across so far.
Syracuse. The program that came in last in our recruiting potential stores series.
10%.
Bingo.
They're all nice and round numbers.
Exactly.
Nice.
Then Florida's their biggest supplier of talent at 23 players. Virginia. Go Virginia and Virginia Tech, group them together because they're next to each other alphabetically, but I just want to hear what your thoughts on
Virginia is 30, I would say.
And what do you think Virginia Tech is?
40.
Virginia's 20 and Virginia Tech is 31. Oh. Virginia Tech will go up. They're much better in state this year. The previous staff recruited Texas a lot, Justin Fuente, much to the chagrin of a lot of Virginia Tech fans. Wake Forest.
I know they spent a lot of time in Georgia, but I'm still going to say like 45%.
19%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was off on that one too.
Georgia, 19. So I went to Wake Forest football practice Saturday. It's kind of cool.
How was it?
Fine. I haven't been to a football practice in a while. They're very nice facilities there. They're all
Did they look
new.
Good?
Huh? Did they look good? I can't tell. It's spring football. All right. So we will get into some other leagues in future podcasts, but I was editing the Big Ten this morning.
Yeah.
What two Big Ten teams have signed the highest percentage of in-state prospects over the last six cycles? I was surprised by this.
Okay.
So that's maybe a hint, maybe not a hint.
Um, Michigan State?
Wrong.
Because all the West are in weird. Would it be Northwestern?
No, private school is never going to be the answer for this. Michigan State's at 27%.
Surprised by this.
You want me to start singing in the background or something?
Is it Ohio State?
It is not Ohio State.
I don't know.
Rutgers at 44% is number one.
Oh, that's not surprising. I should have gotten that. That's embarrassing.
And then
I should have gotten that.
Maryland at 33% is a little surprising.
Yeah, I was thinking of the Big Ten West schools.
I've got the Big Ten open here, but that's not publishing until next week. Not that we
the fact that I didn't get Rutgers immediately is like I should just like resign. That's embarrassing.
Is that a promise or a threat?
Both.
Let me go Rutgers here. Rutgers has had some heavy years, like 55% 1 year, 50% 1 year. So check out this series. Some really interesting stuff. And it's like a lot of transfer portal numbers, junior college signing numbers. So yeah, Manny did a good job with that. All right, let's get some mailbag questions. There's one about. This is from Craig S. And I wanted to address this one. I love that you all rate about what I was just talking about. I love that you all rated schools based on recruiting potential, but I think you really missed the boat by including the coach in the equation. The real power of a great coach who can recruit is taking a school and moving it beyond its known ceiling. So care to do it again, but only ranking the schools by themselves. For instance, from a pure recruiting standpoint, wouldn't the coach at the easiest recruiting school have a distinct advantage like LSU? My counter to this is like, if you remove the coach and all the other factors, you're just ranking the programs. And we've done ranking the programs.
That's why we didn't do it that way.
Right. I'm not saying, Craig, that's a bad idea. Just like, I don't know how you rank recruiting potential with no factors and how that's different.
Well, you would. It's like LSU, for instance, would probably be a top three place because of where they are and who they are.
Yeah.
Regardless of the head coach because of the advantage. But like, we've done that. Like, we tried to make it different because this Colorado would be dead last, maybe. So having them hire because Deion's their head coach was a fun.
Right. So, yeah, there's different ways we could have done it. We chose to do it that way. We've ranked programs in the past.
But we did debate it.
Yeah. No, there was.
But we just wanted to be different.
Yeah. I love this question from their mailbag that published, I think, it was your Tuesday mailbag from Richard N. If you could take a traditionally good program and move it to North Dakota, who would handle the isolation from recruits the best? By move them, I mean the history, campus, facilities, current staff, and players. The only changes are that they are now in North Dakota, and for argument's sake, let's say they have an indoor practice facility with a dome stadium, so weather isn't an issue. What was your answer?
Just give me Nick Saban in North Dakota, and everything's okay. Fine.
Just move Nick the entire Saban, operation. Roster. Move the entire operation to Fargo.
I mean, is there a different answer?
No.
The only other one would be Georgia? Maybe.
I mean, I guess. It's just like, it's a fun question. It's kind of a weird question because like, so is that, I guess the question is, would they still continue to recruit like 15 top 100 players to Fargo?
You'd have North to Dakota? Just find the person that you believe would recruit the best nationally, regardless of location. And I think that would be Nick Saban. And Kirby Smart would be the next one. But you need to give the kids a reason to get on an airplane to go to Fargo. And I think Nick Saban is a pretty big reason people would do that.
Yeah. This goes back into our argument about developing players. This is from Gregor.
I can't do this again.
No, just who develops most players from zero to hero? I mean, zero or from zero star, two star to first 2 days of the draft.
We could look that up and
who's make best it an developer of unknown players. Like it's not Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, because they just don't have that many unknown players. Like if more three-star, you know, they're good.
Yeah. But I wonder if you went and looked at Alabama, Ohio State and Georgia's three-star prospects, if the percentage of their three stars that succeeded were higher than the percentage of three stars that other teams got, I bet you it would be.
Second mention, didn't he do that maybe the first year I worked with him, but he did a lot of research on five stars and he came up, I know that's not this question, that Alabama does in fact sign the most five stars and develops them the best as far as first round draft picks.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between total number and percentage.
Right.
I would still go on a limb and say that Alabama's three star prospects turn into draft picks more frequently than anyone else. you know, I mean, what Georgia just did in the national championship game with a bunch of three-star prospects making huge plays, like, they don't have as many of them on their roster, but the ones they do get develop at a higher rate than the teams that are filled with them. But like, the programs without data in front of me that would jump to my head is like potential answers to this question would be Northwestern, Wisconsin,
Iowa.
I mean, a lot of Big Ten in here. I think Baylor probably, Iowa State.
But from a percentage standpoint, it's pretty low because those schools are signing all three stars, basically.
They're all three stars, yeah. So they're still a good team. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it would be an interesting thing to look at. It would take forever to get the data on that.
Yeah. And
also, it's subjective of, like, what's a hit, like an all-conference player or a draft pick.
Right. I'd like to talk to NFL teams about this, but wouldn't you guess, and this goes back to the argument again about going to schools like Alabama and Georgia to be quote-unquote developed, do you think NFL personnel, they lean on, like, in the sixth round? I don't necessarily know if that's the case, but if there's a safety, are they going to take a kid from Georgia over a kid from FIU?
Yeah, just because you want to know why? Because their coaches are better. It's...
We were talking about a specific, and if you're going to generalize like that, yes, Alabama's coaches are better than FIU's coaches, but we were specifically talking about the quarterback position. So I'm just saying you can get great quarterback coaching at a lot of different places. Hey, Ari, you mad at me?
All right. And I just think that it's crazy. Wait, listen back to this when it's over.
All right. You ready for a little trivia?
I am. I'm excited. I'm fired up. I think I did pretty good on the, I blew the Big Ten one, but
Your ACC percentages were pretty good.
I missed the boat big time on a few.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. This is from, the idea, and he gave me the answer, but I checked it too, from Drew Hayes, longtime listener. He DM'd me on Twitter, and he actually was a listener at the podcast I did with Braden Gall at Athlon Sports for years and years. So appreciate Drew always listening. We've had similar questions like this, but I don't think this one specifically. So there have been 36 starting quarterbacks in the college football playoff, like four per year.
Mm-hmm.
How many quarterbacks who started a college football playoff semifinal game transferred at some point in their career? Now, one potential flaw in this question is I'm counting each quarterback differently. Like, so if the same dude played in two, he counts twice. That makes sense?
Like Jalen Hurts.
Yes. Good example. Good. Yeah.
Wait, did Hurts make the playoff? He did, right?
Several times. Started several times. Because remember, he started a game that he
So that counts as two?
Well, if he started two. Hint. So 36 starting quarterbacks in the semifinal game. Not 36 different, but 36. How many transferred? Could have been transferred into that role, or they could have transferred later?
Seventeen.
14. None in 2014. Dumb question. Just triple confirming. Cardale Jones started for Ohio State, right?
Are you serious?
Yeah. I'm just confirming.
He started the game, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm just...
Because JT Barrett was injured. Right.
Yeah. Okay. I was 99% sure.
Okay, yeah. Rudy went to Notre Dame, right?
What?
Just confirming. Rudy went to Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen
the question's not.
I haven't seen the movie though, so I don't know.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
you really haven't?
I didn't like. I mean, I have really nothing against Notre Dame now. I didn't like Notre Dame growing up, so I didn't read into that Notre. Just sort of like I never saw the Fever Pitch about the Red Sox. I only saw the soccer one.
A nice story.
I was gonna.
But now I guess the guy's like a financial scammer, so maybe it's not such a high.
So 2015, there were two: Baker Mayfield and Jake Coker.
Mm-hmm.
2016, Jalen Hurts. 2017, Baker Mayfield, Jalen Hurts, and Kelly Bryant. Kelly Bryant transferred after. 2018, Kyler Murray. 2019, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, and Justin Fields. 2020, Justin Fields. 2021, Stetson Bennett and Cade McNamara, who just transferred. And 2022, Stetson Bennett. So, there you go.
I'm fine with my answer.
Yeah. It was kind of a weird way because I guess
it's a weird way because like Justin Fields counts twice
and Jalen Hurts counts three times and Baker Mayfield counts twice. But So, I mean, I guess
I almost overshot it. I almost went like 23.
So, I mean, there's 36 starting quarterbacks, but in theory, there's probably what, like 31 if, I mean, I could do the math right now. But
in terms of guys who played multiple games.
Yeah,
31 different people. Okay, well.
Blake Sims started a college football playoff game.
I forgot that Kelly Bryant did.
Yep. Didn't they get, like, it was like 22-3 type game that just, Alabama just destroyed them.
Yeah. One skill set that I wish I had, Andy has this. It's like the ability to recall things like that off the top of his head without looking it up.
I am horrible at recalling specific stuff like that. I'm great, like, memory about remembering where guys played and that individual details on certain things. But, like, if you would have told me who started for Alabama in 2014 before I looked this up, I would have been like, I can't remember. And then I see it's Blake Sims. I'm like, of course it's Blake Sims. Like, I know after the fact, I just can't recall.
Yeah. Okay. So I have an interview in 12 minutes and I want to prepare for it. Is that okay?
You should have prepared for it before in case we went a little long.
Well, we didn't because I can control that. Thank you so much for listening to Stars Matter. Fun episode this week, Mitch. I'm excited to get back with you next week to talk about it again.